I'm Yossi Selig, and I'm the host of Bandsplain, a show where we explain cult bands and iconic artists by going deep into their histories and discographies. We're back with a brand new season at our brand new home, the Ringer Podcast Network, tackling a whole new batch of artists, from grunge gods to power pop pioneers to new metal legends and many, many more. Listen to new episodes every Thursday, only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com. Joining me in the studio is Andy Greenwald, as well as our close personal friend, our kind of our ombudsman, our executive producer.
The chief of our military.
Saddle up. We're about to do some cowboy shit. It's Jason Mantzoukas!
Let's go! Come on.
Oh my God.
From the text chain to the pod, let's talk about Reacher. New year, new energy.
We're just wearing Amazon classics, Amazon basics here. We're ready to fucking hijack some trucks. Let's
go. Fuck yes. What is Project Little Wing? Let's get into it. It's not just a Jimi Hendrix song.
It's a good one. It's a good Jimi Hendrix song. I love the Derek and the Dominoes version of it.
I didn't really realize till this moment that Amazon Basics is now like the motto for Prime Video as well.
But it's
like,
let's just knock it out. This is my operating theory, is that Reacher is actually spawn for Amazon Basics. That everything that they are wearing is like, well, that looks like Safe Khaki, but I think it's not.
Absolutely not. Reacher buys an entire set of clothing for himself in a gas station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, he is, I don't know, 7'6", 440. I don't know. The guy is an enormous behemoth.
He's Jack Wembanyama. Yeah.
In reality, in that actor way, is he genuinely like 5'6"?
You would probably know better than I do.
I'm sure he's a big guy.
He is a nice dude when I've seen him on like YouTube interviews and stuff like that. That's a good question. What is actor size?
Yes. What is his genuine, like, I'd like to know his actual size.
The way that he walks.
They frame him well.
But
I will say.
Can we talk about his walk? Yeah. I mean, Jason,
he's taking up space.
You're a performer.
Oh, well, thank you, Andy.
What is he communicating with?
That means a lot, actually. That means a lot coming from you.
You are also a performer who looks enormous on screen, who looks muscular.
Yes. Jacked.
How tall are you? Do you mind sharing?
I'm 5'11".
He's 6'3".
Okay, oh, good. Yeah, great. So he's big.
Yeah, I think he would pose a size advantage over you in the post. But,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think.
And you could frame us if I were to be cast in Reacher season 3. Hear me out. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to have him tower over me. I'm not looking for like Vin Diesel. Oh, if I'm the bad guy, it's got to be a draw.
You could be like the Amazon Basics customer service rep who fields his call when he's just like, there's a little bit of a fraying hemline on
it's
my khakis.
It's not just the clothes. It's the thumb drives.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like down to the
everything.
Office supplies.
In that way that all Apple shows feature not just characters using Apple products, but featuring the ringtones of Apple.
Yes.
Like, everybody on an Apple show answers after three rings.
Yes.
Just so you can get that same Apple ringtone.
Because I'm not like cripplingly addicted to this thing and it's not in my hand all the time.
And it's like, oh, okay, what, Jackson Lamb's gonna wait to answer the phone? I could talk about
when
slow
I
horses
Andy,
for the rest.
I know if he doesn't pick up on the first ring that it's gonna go to voicemail.
He's
but
he's probably
like,
dead.
I got thrown out of a helicopter.
He's in a
now, in my defense, I was killed first.
But. We're going to talk about Reacher. We already are. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Percy Jackson, which Jason is just living large in right now on the Disney Plus Network.
I'm in my Greek god phase.
This is really huge for me on a number of levels. Both, I want to talk about Percy Jackson, but also
great.
I want to watch Chris talk about Percy
Jackson.
Well,
I know
this
that you're
sick.
A little bit behind on the Reacher stuff because you've been working really hard on the Golden Globes monologue
that
you wrote. So
rough boss.
Yeah.
I got a text yesterday from someone saying, hey, are you going out tonight? Yesterday was the Golden Globes. And I was like, to what? For what? Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's the Golden Globes. And I was like, I had no idea. I completely spaced the reality that, I mean, this is, I feel like the Golden Globes have literally fallen off of the.
Well, they were fully like exiled from
Gonzo.
Society. Yeah. And then they have now been brought back more or less in like. They were revived wearing their same skin suit, but there was something very strange about last night's
in
awards.
A,
did you actually
Silence of the
watch
Lambs
any of it?
Way.
I engaged with it. Okay. I did not watch it live.
Uh-huh.
I kind of dipped in and out. I watched some clips. And here's the thing. If you didn't watch the award show, I'm not saying I didn't.
Oh, I'm saying I didn't.
It's possible that I didn't.
Right.
But if you didn't, you could look at the list of winners and be like, that is a really respectable selection.
Absolutely.
Did they get anything like wildly wrong?
Was it too respectable?
Oh, look at you.
Was it too respectable? You mean like respectable or predictable?
Like
or
it was fine.
Safe?
Mm-hmm. It was safe and it was
because that's the Globes' thing was always like, we're taking swings.
We're crazy.
We're doing wild stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And that there's like some weird, like, this guy got taken to dinner 14 times. Mm-hmm. And so that means that like this person's going to win supporting actor.
Well, yeah.
Scene.
It used to be what kind of access are you granting to the 42 maniacs who are make up the HFP whatever.
And now instead this seemed to be like almost like an aggregated version of like conventional wisdom. Like what everybody's like, that's great. Divine Joy Randolph and Paul Giamatti and all of Oppenheimer.
It was chalk. They got everything right. Basically, pissed off no one and made an completely inessential and boring television
Imagine
product.
If they had had like a normal monologue. Like that would have just, if somebody had just gone out there and been like, welcome to the Globes and let's get into the awards. Like they probably would have been like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
For all the CR heads out there, get to work next year. Chris Ryan hosting the Globes. You just heard the monologue.
Now, Jason, you're a performer and a comedian.
No, I'm listening, Andy. I love that you are forced to talk about my professional work when I'm here.
I am thrilled to have you here across from me. And I'm just wondering, what would your approach be in a gig like that? Because now, in Joe Coy's defense,
sure,
which I've never taken this corner before. I'm going to try it out,
see
how it feels.
The Coy defense corner?
The coiner. No.
Yeah, we'll keep working on it.
The Coy pond?
Right.
Yeah.
The Coy Polloy?
It's getting better.
I mean, we're getting somewhere.
It's a tough room, right? Because
for sure.
Is that a tough room?
Well, this is what I'm asking Jason.
It's a bunch of people who want to be loved, slightly buzzed.
Yeah, I've got to feel like I've only hosted one thing before, and that was the Sundance Awards for one of the years of the festival, right? Mm. And which is not a TV show. It's like just the awards show at the end of the thing. But it was that same kind of getting up to a room full of people who are like, we don't want to be here a long time. I want to hear my awards. So you're trying to thread the needle of being charming and funny and putting on a show while simultaneously not taking up too much time.
Right.
Because people don't really want to be there. They just want to get to the part that is about them and then they want to leave immediately.
And go to parties.
Yeah. Or, you know, or be done with, in this case, the festival. It was the end of the whole thing. So anyway, I feel like I always loved Amy and Tina's version of it just because they had the right balance to me of poking and roasting people, busting balls, but also like being funny and having the opportunity for people to do bits and they would play with everybody.
Yes.
You know, which I think is the way to do it. You know, I don't know.
Can I ask you a serious question about being funny?
Yeah.
How hard would it be for Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell to sustain the thing that they do over the course of an entire hosting gig?
Oh, wow. That would be interesting. I mean,
because they come out and they do like usually like
sure.
they, over the years, like they've done a bunch of these things where they like show up and do like an absurdist bit. And everybody's like, oh, God, thank God, like some actual like comedy.
Yeah.
And then but like if they had to be like
I think you'd have to restructure what it would be, and it would almost be like the thing that Will and Molly Shannon do when they hosted the Rose Bowl parade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they hosted? Yeah, they hosted a parade. Like, I'm not sure if it's right? that it. But yeah. they're playing characters. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that Will and Christine, if they were to do it, would play characters. I think they would continue to play themselves. But you'd have to think of a bit that you could maintain right. because what they're doing is structuring bits that are acting opposition to the show.
Yes.
Versus if they are the show, the bit, I still think they could do a bit that would be incredibly funny and compelling. It just would have to be able to be... You drop out of it for a long period of time, pick it back up.
Like, and here's Bryce Waterhouse,
still,
by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. And now they come back, still funny.
Now, when you did the Sundance Festival, and you handed the trophy to Spitfire Grill, whatever.
Sure.
Placeholder. I mean, people didn't know. It was just the festival was smaller.
Yeah. Oh, no. It was absolutely, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Yeah.
Did you offend Bob? Like, was Bob there?
No. He was not there. I was told watching, though. So I'm assuming
America,
there must have been some sort of,
exactly.
I don't know. There must have been some sort of feed that people could see or something like that. But he was not there in person.
Okay.
I see. So you were not worried about his.
I was not.
Did you get feedback since he was watching?
I did not get feedback from him at all. Mm. No.
What was your sickest burn?
Oh, man. I didn't have many burns. All of my burns were on myself.
I see.
All of my burns were for myself and the absurdity of me hosting this award event.
I see.
Anyway.
I mean, it's a gentler crowd. These are people like first time often, smaller films. You can't go in there with a blow.
And did you have any FOMO? Because, there's now these two different ways of experiencing these award shows.
Right.
You can either do it live, which is what I chose to do. And then you can kind of like basically aggregate it from blog posts and Twitter.
I was excited to learn about, because it's been a number of years, I still forget that things start at 5 p.m. here, so I was not dialed in.
Yeah.
The way I learned about it was our friend Sean Fennessy, a withering tweet that he dropped about the host, Joe Coy. I mean, wow. Burned bridges. I was like, this doesn't seem to be going well.
Wow.
So I was intrigued by that.
Okay.
But then it's hard to have FOMO about something that seems to be going very poorly.
Well, once they started.
You're saying
doing
Sean
awards.
Fennessy, the guy that is stealing all of your guests.
Yes.
The guy that Sam Esmail goes on his podcast to talk about stuff. You're telling me Jake Johnson.
Yes.
a hallmark over the years of The Watch guests is on Sean Fennessy's podcast.
A 1B to your 1A.
Here's what I'm willing to say. Yeah. And yes, Jake and I could play brothers in something at some point, and I do hope we do. I will never abandon The Watch.
Yeah. Thank you.
Until Sean asks me to do it, at which point I'm going to have to say yes, guys.
So, some news, Jason's film was just accepted into Sundance.
Yeah, right.
He finally cashed that ticket.
Sean's hosting the awards.
It's a goddamn shame. But Golden Globes overall, though, I mean, I feel like we don't need to get into it.
Yeah,
but
I don't have anything really big to note. It was like obviously a victory lap for Succession.
Right.
The Bear made out like bandits.
Happy
Io
to see that.
And Jeremy winning and the show winning. I'm trying to remember if there was anything kind of notable with
all
that.
All the beef wins, Allie and Steven winning. Incredible.
The cast of Suits presenting best drama was surreal. Because I don't know, like, the point we were trying to make with that.
That feels like AI made that made
and
that
were,
whole
they
thing
were
happen.
Like, they looked great. They did a lovely job. They were charming. I was just like, I wonder. I mean, they kind of made a joke about it, but I was like, I wonder what it feels like to be up there and just be like, more people watch Suits like 8 times over than Succession.
Then watched all of these shows combined.
But you made fun of me a couple weeks ago, and I was like, Chris. Shoegaze hasn't had a year like 2023 since the early 90s. But we are living in this moment where something that is relatively obscure.
Why? Because of a new Slow Dive record?
Because of TikTok.
Yeah,
because
every kid is
into shoegaze. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, we do live in this moment where something can just happen 20 years ago and then be a big deal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's nice.
Listen, I bought, the Kate Bush record. When it came out on cassette when I was 13 years old, because I heard Running Up the Hill on the radio.
Now, were you in the Upside Down when that happened?
Yeah, man. Fuck yeah, man.
But
11 needed my help.
I guess the one thing that I wasn't clear on, but you guys may have been more seeing this coming, but like I didn't realize what a front runner Oppenheimer would be for Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
it makes so much sense that it seems like silly. That maybe
I don't feel like we've had this, Sean, who has a much more esteemed podcast than us, but like
I'm so sorry, guys. I just got a text from Sean. I have to go into a studio across
the
hall.
It's not even a pod, it's just he wants to
go. I got
to
walk over across the hall and get a coffee with Sean.
It's been a while since we had a juggernaut kind of front runner that also almost, you know, mid-January now, and there hasn't really been a significant, like, are we sure about Oppenheimer push?
But it's not just that. It's like the conversation for the last 10 years has been like, boy, if only they would nominate a movie that was popular with
With
the Koi Polloi.
Yes.
And this is, it sounded weirder the second time. and Oppenheimer made $1 billion.
Well, it's like, it's as, yeah, exactly. They have it, the extending, you know, the Best Picture nominations to 10 was for The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
You know, so Nolan is the person they want to give that, they're trying to curry that his audience, that huge audience that's showing up for his spectacle-laden movies, but we just haven't had one that also lined up with incredible performances. And, you know, no shade to Tenet, but it wasn't there. And I know his Peloton instructor has notes. I think there's going to be a Peloton cut. Release the Peloton cut.
You pedal backwards. The weight flies off. Flies on, I guess.
Yeah.
You get super big.
It's just like eating stuffing.
I watched the Tenet cut. I'm 10 pounds heavier.
Did you see this Peloton instructor video?
I did.
Okay, good.
I did. You know how I saw it? Last time we were in the studio, some strange sound started coming from your computer, and you were just watching it cold. You weren't telling me and Kaya what you were doing.
That's true.
But you were just, you couldn't help but crush the content.
It's January 8th. Mm-hmm. Are you fully into new stuff, watching new shit, or are you still like catching up on 2023 stuff that was on best of lists?
Here's what I'll say. I am doing it all. I am current on a bunch of stuff that is happening. You know, all of our Reachers, our Slow Horses just ended, you know, like a lot of the stuff that's happening right now. I'm also catching up on end of year stuff, a tremendous amount of especially movies that I have just not seen.
Okay.
And I'm also, I will say the last few years, I'm heavy into like processing long-running shows that I've never watched before. I'm currently in the midst of The Good Wife.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And it is...
You're a great consumer.
And do you know,
phenomenal.
Do you know much about how Good Wife is goes?
Here's the deal, Chris. I do not. Okay, so much
great.
So...
Great.
That I just watched a thing that was, in my opinion, I suspect, equivalent to The Red Wedding.
Uh-huh.
For The Good Wife. Had no idea it was coming and flipped out.
Yes.
Was watching it like... in my parents' house over the holidays at like 2 a.m. for like a little bit of myself time and was like flipping out like, what the I'm not going to say what it is, but what the fuck just happened?
For Good Wife fans, it was a foundational moment. Like,
oh
like,
my God.
Yeah, it shakes your belief.
It also made sense for that why that season was feeling up until that point absolutely bananas.
Yes.
Are you, Jason, like when you're watching the schedule clears, you're like, I can plug a nine season CBS procedural into this hole. Are you full? You giving your full attention? Like, do you find as you're getting older with the competition for your time? Like, are you second screening this stuff ever?
No.
Or is The Good Wife from 2005
there are things,
grab you?
There are things I will second screen, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But The Good Wife, or you know, the shows that I feel like, and I will only allow myself one open-ended long thing.
At a time.
Mm-hmm. At a time. Got because it. I don't have the ability to just shuffle through stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't drop a thing for a month, pick it back up, and continue to, I'm lost easily. And so, like, last year I did most of Doctor Who, which people have been telling me for years.
Do you start in the 60s?
No, started, that would have been insane. No, started with the Christopher Eccleston, the modern Doctor Who. And people have been telling me for so long, it's great. Including our friend Mallory Rubin.
Yep.
And turns out it's fucking great, you know, and loved it. And then when that was kind of winding down, I was like, okay, Good Wife seems like another inarguable, I've never heard anybody say anything bad about it. And it's the perfect, it goes down smooth.
Yes. It's got case of the week, but it also has the.
Exactly. Yeah. And I knew that The Good Fight was, people loved The Good Fight. I like The Kings. I've watched a bunch of Evil. And then the Elsbeth Tassioni Looking to the Future spinoff series. Coming up soon.
She was getting a lot of promo last night during the Golden Globes. This is another spinoff from The Good Wife.
What's it going to be called?
Elsbeth. maybe one of my favorite characters.
I don't think that's
Tassioni.
I think that's that's getting closer.
Tassioni. It's CBS.
Of movies, because Andy and I have been talking about this recently. I think we've both been catching up on award stuff that has been coming out. Is there anything that's been jumping out at you that you loved from the end of the year? Award season movies
That I will say that is a lot of the stuff that I'm weak on.
Okay.
You know, is like those big awards. Like, I've not seen May December. I've not seen a bunch of like the awards big movies. The Holdovers, loved.
Yep.
Loved the Holdovers.
It's a phenomenal movie.
You mean on campus? Like that kind of safe space?
Yeah. This is... Listen.
Did you guys... Here's a movie. I'm going to pull a movie from earlier in the year because I know... It's not that I don't want to talk about those movies, but there is an element too where I'm like, ooh, if I can like pepper it.
Yeah, because we didn't say this at the top, but like we weren't able to align our schedules for the end of the year stuff.
Yes. So happy with only because I loved your episode about it. And I'm happy to talk about other stuff.
Yeah, fill in the blanks.
And plus, I'm not looking to be some sort of Sam replacement. I don't need the people saying like, oh, we didn't get Sam, but we got this clown.
It's tough.
Did you guys see Polite Society?
No.
Incredible.
What is it?
So, see, this is what the bummer is. And I hear you guys talk about it all the time. And I talk to my friends about it all the time. And on my podcast... The bummer about streaming culture as it exists now is the same problem I'm having with music, which is curation and discovery.
Uh-huh.
So there is great stuff out there that is so difficult to figure out how to be introduced to it, exposed to it, recommended to it, or whatever. This is a movie from middle of the year. I believe the woman's name is Nita Manzoor. She's a British filmmaker. She made We Are Lady Parts, the TV show Are Lady Parts, which
is
one of my favorite shows of the last bunch of years. And this is an incredible movie that exists in a space that is both a family coming of age story, but then also has like a exciting sci-fi supernatural element kind of woven into it. That's really incredible and cool.
It was at Sundance. Is that where you saw it? Were you there?
Oh, no, I was not there. Was it at Sundance? I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool. Yes. So it comes out of Sundance. Great. It's a great movie. And I feel like it's completely lost in the conversation, except for it was on Obama's top 10 movies of the year list. And I was like, Barry gets it. Come on.
Barry is deep in these Hollywood streets.
Oh, yeah. So that's a movie that I feel like, oh, boy, I wish that had gotten more attention because not that it's like, gonna win an Oscar or something like that, but I wish it was just getting more of the end of year.
Was it a straight to streaming thing, or was it?
Yeah, it was. Okay. It was. I can't remember where it went to, but that's a movie that I feel like didn't get enough heat that I think deserved it because it was phenomenal.
So along your streaming lines, I think we touched on this a little bit on Thursday's show, but only a little bit. We were talking about Steven Soderbergh's sort of year-end media diary and like the preponderance of Netflix stuff and how I was on Netflix this week and kind of adding some of the stuff that was on his list, just adding it to my list. And the amount of it that I had to search for, not even like because I was expecting all of it to be on the front page because I know that's all algorithmic and stuff like that. But like the amount of stuff that they have in their library compared to like how hard it is to find it.
Well, that's
and if it comes out and you miss that first week of it, you're just like, oh, I have to like make a like physical note of it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, and sometimes I find that they are even, I have to really work hard to find a thing, even knowing that I've found it before or seen it before or whatever. That the interface or the interaction with so many of these things is itself stressful.
Yes.
In a way that, I don't know, for me at least, I still have DirecTV or I still have a cable package.
Yeah.
All I want to do is flip around.
Yeah.
All I want to do is flip around and be like, oh, The Grifters is on? Fuck yes. We're watching The Grifters. Go. You know?
Yeah, why can't they? It would be cool if they could take basically all the apps that you have and then make the basically the guide that you get for cable but have no ads.
Wouldn't that be great?
Guys, is this our idea?
Wouldn't that be great?
Is this our killer app?
Cable with no ads?
Or just an aggregator that effectively pulls everybody, every streaming service, and presents it in a fashion that is truly makes sense for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I feel like I am missing huge swaths of good stuff.
Sharks, I feel like you'll find that our proposal is complete.
I feel like the problem with that is that when there's only two streaming services left, and then one of them is like, actually, never mind.
Yeah, that'll probably do it.
What else besides Polite Society? Like, what else has been kind of like some of your underrated jams from this year?
Underrated jams from this year. Ooh, I'd love to talk about underrated jams. So TV stuff, I feel like, you know, whenever, like, you guys talking about your end of lists or when I'm consuming other people's lists in, you know, written or podcasts or whatever, I mean, so much overlap on those iconic shows of right now, and so few of them are comedies, you know?
Yes.
I was so thrilled when Kaya shouted out Starstruck, which is one of my favorite shows of the year. And then I'll also shout out another great rom-com sitcom, the Australian show Colin from Accounts.
Oh yeah,
you're not the first person to.
I am.
This up to
I'm
me.
The first person. You're I invented it.
Jake Johnson first.
No.
And then look,
how dare you?
I'm just saying.
An incredible show from Harriet Dyer, who is so funny, and her talentless hack of a husband, Patrick Bramall, who I do not care for. Trent O'Donnell, a team of people that are so funny and have worked on many other incredibly funny shows, one of which I was on. But this show is absolutely dynamite.
Okay.
The chemistry is so good. The dialogue is crackling in that way that, like, oh, when you find out they are actually married in real life, you really get a sense of that dynamic. And they're both hilarious performers. And it's just a great, simple rom-com setup, and I loved it. And again, like, very, I feel like, slept on here.
What is that on?
Peacock. No,
Paramount.
No, Paramount. I'm sorry.
I got them both.
Nice. Are you bragging?
Well,
Chris has got them all.
I have Paramount primarily for all my Taylor stuff, you know?
Oh, that's yeah. Right. Gotta. Yeah.
Are you into Taylor Sheridan shows?
Fuck yeah, bro. We talked about Yellowstone like 7 years ago.
Did you watch Lioness?
I watched half of Lioness.
It
got pretty intense for me.
That's when it got intense.
At a time when I was like, I don't know if I want to do
when
this.
When you say half, do you mean you just watched the medical plots?
Yes. Like
you
had I only watched the husband.
You had it bespoke.
I was
edited.
Like the doctor husband. I only want to know what he's up
yes.
to.
Yeah. Take
and
out
then
the
it
military.
Turns out a lot, you know? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
I fast forward until I see someone sitting next to the pool. And I only watch those scenes.
You're interested in the home front. I respect that.
I would like to make a home front cut of Lioness for you.
No, oh then God. I would watch the other one. Yeah. I couldn't handle the home front.
That's right. That's right.
Between the two of us, we could handle the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
The drone
it.
Stuff you're into.
That's
yeah.
easy.
Did
That's
you
fine.
Watch Tulsa King?
I watched the first two episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the first four.
I was not super feeling it.
I wasn't
I actually
either.
Have to, I'll be honest with you guys and our listeners. I always say that I won't lie to our listeners. And as a Philadelphian, I think this is probably strange, but I'm not a huge Sylvester Stallone person.
Wow.
Of all my 80s action guys, he's probably like in the lower rung of the top 10,
I agree.
Top 5.
Top, oh, give me your top yeah, 5 80s action guys.
Bruce Willis.
Got it.
Yeah. The everyman.
I think Arnold, honestly.
For sure. Undeniable.
In the moment, in terms of introducing me to different cultures and the world of
I
romance.
I feel like you're about to say, okay.
Steven Seagal?
Yes. You had me until romance.
Other well, cultures.
He has some incredible love interests in some of his films. You know, like, they really communicate in a language beyond language.
You're talking,
you know?
Talking
jumping out of a cake?
What are you no, talking about?
No, I was like, who is the lady in March for Death who, like, saves him, the nurse?
You're looking at me. You're just staring at me right now.
It's either March for Death or Hard to Kill, and it's either... I think it might be Kelly LeBrock, but I'm not sure.
His actual wife.
No,
at
it's
the time.
Just his, and it's just like she's his nursing him back after he gets like gunned down.
Right.
I think by a Jamaican posse, but I
if
can't
if you
remember.
Have the time, do yourself a favor and read Last Action Heroes or listen to the audiobook like I did. All it is chapter by chapter stories about each of these guys: Arnold, Sly, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Seagal.
Does Seagal come off well?
He is. He. I'll be honest. He comes out, and I already was like, this guy's a piece of shit going into it. Turns out he's a bad dude.
Yeah. He's a bad hombre. But, you know, I mean, I'm just talking about cinema.
Yeah.
Know?
Oh, yeah. The Under Siege? Come on.
What about you? Do you have any action movie favorites from the 80s? Any stars?
I think our lists actually align, probably.
Bruce Willis?
Of course,
Schwarzenegger.
Bruce Willis first.
Yeah.
The other person I'll throw in there that is that I feel like at the time I didn't have near the appreciation for that I do now, and in many ways would rank this person now like in the top two, is Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those movies from that era are just unparalleled.
This might be a good way into talking about
Reacher.
Well, I was going to say actually Blue Eye Samurai.
Great.
I wanted to ask you guys, which we hadn't
discussed on the show.
I love it.
I binged
one of my top shows of the year.
And I binged it in a weekend with like kind of like I had a bunch of people being like Blue Eye Samurai. And I was like, fine, actually, you know what happened was...
I'm desperate to know what happened. Because when I asked Chris to watch a cartoon...
Well, here's what I'm going to say. As a longtime listener, one of my great frustrations is that Chris will not watch animation.
Yeah.
Shows I've recommended go by the wayside. I talk about Tuca and Birdie, and Chris pissed on the floor.
Yeah. It's true. And you guys were in a hospital.
We were in a hospital.
We were talking
about
it.
And thank God, because they were like, there's blood in there. You should get checked, bro. Yeah,
no. So in a way, you're welcome.
Your Tuca and Birdie levels are too low. It's obviously affecting your urinary tract.
But no, there's been so many shows over the years that I would have loved to have talked about with you guys. But Chris has a for real no cartoons policy.
Yes.
And then I hear you talking about Scavenger's Reign.
Yes.
And I'm like, here we go.
It's happening.
And it's happening.
I think if people knock on the door loud enough, I will answer. I don't always let them in. Mm. I don't always let the drawings in.
That's interesting.
But, and it's not to say that you haven't been convincing in your Miyazaki advocacy, and that I also haven't been conducting close to a decade-long bit with you about how I'm not going to watch these things. But for the sake of this pod, I did watch, obviously, Scavenger's Reign, which we both really thought was cool. And then Blue Eye Samurai, I was sitting in my living room, I think watching like an NBA game one night. And then I hear from the other room, like the dulcet tones of someone avenging their father. And I was like, what's going on? And my wife Phoebe was just like, that show Blue Eye Samurai, like so-and-so told me to watch
it. She just fired it up?
Yeah.
She just fired it. I was like,
Phoebe,
what are you doing?
It.
And I came in, we watched all of it.
I should be potting with Phoebe.
I know. Well,
and I should be in your house just turning on Princess Mononoke and being like, hey, bro. Were you sleeping?
I love that show.
Love it.
It was so beautiful, like legitimately. And I know that that's like, I'm almost nervous to talk about it because I'm sure many people will be like, there are so many other examples of animation that you could be focusing on.
I don't think so. You know what I mean? Like in the sense that like,
terrible.
In the sense that like, I know what you're saying. Like there is like, if you fire up Crunchyroll, there's going to be...
Now I'm listening.
1 million hours of incredible high-end anime that we've just not heard of.
Yes.
Although I have watched a TV show that is called My Happy Marriage that I urge everyone to check out because it is just a romance anime and it is dynamite.
Wait, is it on Crunchyroll?
No, it's on Netflix.
You can borrow my login.
Oh, wait, I think it's on Netflix.
Do you have Crunchyroll?
I sure do.
Oh, those like kids have got to be all up in that Crunchyroll.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. Kumi Can't Communicate, big hit in the house.
But what I loved, Blue-Eyed Samurai, I thought was like unbelievable just action choreography.
Yeah.
Like the last two episodes are essentially like a long
siege.
Battle, you know, and that stuff, like I was like, oh, this is scratching an itch that isn't just a great character revenge samurai story, but like massive epic battle. Like it is a show that like goes from small scale one-on-one fights to enormous battle. It feels like it has Lord of the Rings scope and is gorgeously animated.
Do you know much about, because it's John Green and
Michael Green.
And Michael Green and Amber Nozomi created it. I don't know much about the origin story for it, but it's, you know, Maya Erskine voices the central character.
That's a married couple. Michael Green is a fairly well-known screenwriter.
I know he wrote like On Prometheus or something like that, or like one of the
aliens. Yeah, and Heroes, he did American Gods.
Blade Runner, yeah.
Blade Runner, he was sort of a go-to guy for high-end IP sci-fi stuff for a long time, and this is something he did with his wife. I got to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
I like that Chris is walking into the studio being like, don't kill me, I think this is beautiful. I'm the real brave one because I didn't like it.
So, but I think that this speaks more to, but as much as I have an allergy to animation, apparently you have an allergy to Japanese warriors.
Well, which is weird because I love brothels.
Yeah.
If it was just like,
and there was quite
there
a bit
was,
of that.
And I was like, okay, all right, tell yeah. me more.
There's get a
more
lot of noodle eating.
If there
too?
Could be some more like fruit analogies for body parts in the early yeah. going, I feel like I could find my
if
way in
animated
here.
Kenneth Branagh could have yeah. more threesomes.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a show that mm-hmm. I feel like I'm going to recommend that I don't know that you will actually like, but okay. I was like, oh, I feel like Andy would like this. Mm-hmm. It is Delicious Dungeon, it's called.
Here, I'm halfway there.
That's the
okay,
name of the-
it is. It's an anime.
Seal,
that is
seal the deal.
It's an anime that has as its structure a campaign-esque Dungeons & Dragons story
okay.
where all the characters align with the kinds of characters in a Dungeons & Dragons story.
Mm-hmm.
They exist inside of a... like a dungeon that is seemingly bottomless, or they're trying okay. to actually get up to the top, and there's monsters everywhere, and they have to kill monsters.
Okay.
But one of the guys, every episode stops down. So one of the guys, I think he's the dwarf, can spend minutes cooking the yeah. monsters that they've killed into delicious meals that everyone then eats. And his cooking is a huge feature of the show. It is a half of every episode is battling. And then it's how all the miniature ways that in order to eat this toxic monster,
yes.
you have to prepare it this way. And then he walks you through. And so it is so wild.
This looks awesome.
Every episode is like battling a dragon. And then like, you know, it stops down into like Jiro Dreams
Andy
of Sushi.
Andy loves dragons.
This is on Netflix. I'm going to watch this.
Get involved.
I do think... I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was incredibly well made. I enjoyed the voice cast a lot. Maybe I don't like samurai revenge stories.
Yeah,
like I'm finding out something about myself.
You said that you've never really been a martial arts samurai guy. Can you think? Yeah. I mean, like
I like Van Damme movies and Seagal movies. Oh God, like an American. I don't know. Okay, guys, Jackie Chan, whatever.
I thought that I was wondering whether or not you were turned off by the albeit drawn. No. Arterial blood spray.
No, it seemed accurate to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought it was, especially at a time when I feel like I've wanted more, like, boy, do I wish this felt more like what modern Star Wars has been.
Yeah.
Like, I would love, like, a story like this inside of that world.
I mean, think they could definitely use some more brothels in Star Wars.
100%.
Big time.
Yeah. I think my issue was more that it was incredibly serious homage to a certain style of filmmaking when it's... And it's very, very serious.
Yeah,
it's very self-serious.
I wonder whether or not it's like...
And I'm like, okay, I see it.
I get that.
Like, I like the thing that's like animated Kurosawa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah. rather than like, perhaps like finding the far reaches of like the...
I truly didn't want to yuck anyone's yum.
You're not.
I didn't want to like cook the monster dish poorly
right.
in the dungeon. It left me cold.
I understand that. And I think that is a valid criticism that I don't think is necessary. I don't hold against you. I think,
Thank you.
If it's not for you, that's fine. I think you're a fucking idiot.
Also, Chris looks pissed.
When we were, before you got here, when we were talking, we were like, if he doesn't like it,
for what it's worth, out. Sean Fantasy told me he didn't like it either.
Yeah.
So I just feel like there's some shifting allegiances here. That's what I think.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
What else did you love from this year?
Here's my question, and maybe I'm wrong, and we can look it up, and it's maybe 2022, but I'm pretty sure nobody is talking about The Other Two as one of the best shows of the year.
And it is. I never watched that show. I think I watched like the first season for a couple of episodes and then fell off of it.
I told him it was animated.
Here's what I'm going to say. This show is fucking funny. I have not seen a show in a long time that I feel like truly threads the needle between one scene or even in the same scene being absolutely balls out absurdly hilarious and then flipping and turning it into something truly heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Something truly devastating, heartbreaking, and then coming out of that with another bit of absurd.
Not sincere Rafi scenes from The League.
Correct. Correct. But I don't know, like, I felt like that first season was good. And then seasons two and three, I thought just get stronger and stronger. And I don't know if it's because COVID made them able to write longer or I'm not sure what, or if they really just figured it out it's a great ensemble. It's great character stuff. Drew Tarver is absolutely hilarious. Helene York is devastating this season. Like, truly has such a great arc this final season. The show is so funny. One of the best TV episodes I'd say in the last 5 years is the celebrity church episode in season two.
Okay.
The entire thing takes place inside of like a Hillsong type, like, like church with a shirtless, ripped preacher. Yeah. It's fucking nuts. It's great.
So Jason, as we've mentioned, you're a performer.
Yes.
Chris was saying you're a comedian.
Apparently.
You're handsome, you're talented, you're thoughtful.
I'm listening.
Do you feel, are you a generous laugh? When you watch, like, when you settle down to watch a comedy from people you don't know.
It's a good question.
Let's say, but you've mentioned twice how you enjoy watching comedy. I mean,
sure. Everyone. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I guess what I question is, it's a professional obligation for you. So do you find yourself—
Or is it like a busman's holiday?
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Yes, I do find most comedy unsatisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I think comedy works, a comedy working for you is entirely predicated on you being surprised by what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, having now been doing comedy for 25 now years, I can usually anticipate where a joke is going, where a setup is going. I can usually, so I'm not as surprised. So the things that I do find funny are usually things that have a genuinely surprising, absurd bent, your I Think You Should Leaves or The Other Twos, or are just characters or setups that I think that I find hit me right. Mm-hmm. So that is all of Jared Kiso's work. So that's Letterkenny or the new show Shoresy. I find his sense of humor just hits me right. And I just cackle my way through those shows. So, you know, it really has to be, but I find it very hard to get on with like a just straight comedy. A straight network comedy usually isn't surprising to me. So it's not that I'm not a generous laugh, but I might not laugh as much. I might enjoy a show. But for me to really like be cackling, I really have to be like, I did not expect that to happen.
But then how do you then factor in like, okay, so if you're watching Succession, for example, which is a very funny show.
Sure.
Not billed as a comedy.
Yeah, sure.
Do jokes in a setup like that, do you value them differently? Do they surprise you more? Like, is it all
one? Oh, well,
one?
I'll say, for example, and Succession's a great one, but you guys talking to Will Smith about Slow Horses is an even better one. Because I think he's doing a trick that I don't see done many other places except for Steve Conrad shows, which is being genuinely hilarious inside of a show without releasing the tension.
That is dramatic, right?
Yes.
The stakes are still slow guns horses.
We are driving forward into a situation that is tenuous. And I'm still able to laugh at a Jackson Lamb joke or an absurd moment that happens. You know, I won't spoil anything. I guess you guys talked all about it, but like all the stuff with Jackson Lamb and the other guy going in the car, was making me laugh
Ronnie.
In a way that and they're having to get there so fast, and they're everything we're seeing only tells us they need to get there urgently. But while we're with them getting there, don't worry, it's funny.
Yeah,
you know, and that is without. Tough. Without letting the steam out, without letting its foot off the gas, literally and figuratively, that show's able to be funny. And that I really value because one of the things that I have a problem with, but one of the things that I wish was more evident in some of our beloved Four Dads by Dads shows, Reacher, and I can't help but notice you guys didn't talk at all in your year-end best of the year about season two of Bosch Legacy. Okay. A truly wonderful, humorless show.
Yeah.
A show that is not interested in any of its characters making each other laugh.
That's
seemingly.
Not part of the human condition it's that they're
not,
interested in.
It's really not. And a lot of these shows could benefit from that. Justified City Primeval, I would have loved some more laughs out of that as well.
But Reacher, I mean, maybe this is the time to talk about
they're
Reacher.
They're trying.
Because so... Okay, so can we jump to Reacher?
Please.
I still want to talk Percy, but I want to talk Reacher.
Oh, yeah. I've got other stuff to talk, too. Unicorn Warriors Eternal? Don't worry about it. I'll talk about it.
Is that the Bosch Legacy of the Unicorn Warriors saga? Like, they canceled it under one name
and
brought it
and
back.
Now it's on Freevee, and it's too expensive to rent the house.
Because here's the thing about Reacher Season 2. The Season 2 begins, much as Season 1 ended, with him buying thrift store clothing and just happening to stumble upon a carjacking in a rural town. When, and I don't think this is a spoiler, this was in the trailers, when Reacher resolves the carjacking situation by lumbering over to the SUV.
I think he's pretty spry.
No, that's not the right word, but he has some gravitas to his footfalls, let's say. We then cut to the interior car where the carjacker's like, your mom better get that money, kid. Your mom better get that money. And then we see Reacher coming. And then Reacher punches through the window and pulls the man out. I don't think I've laughed that hard with my entire body.
I know when I laughed harder is when Reacher in, I think the subsequent episode, goes up to a car that Dominic Lombardozzi is sitting in and kicks the hood of the car so hard that the airbag deploys and breaks Dominic Lombardozzi's nose. And then he pulls him out and punches him in the face.
Incredible
100
stuff.
Times.
But for a show that is that funny in that way, it is so charmless in every other moment.
Do you think they think those are jokes? I think not.
I don't know. They do a lot of good. I think that they're like, so for instance, like the most recent episode, I believe, or maybe there's one up afterwards, is when like Reacher and a character named O'Donnell, who's in his like special investigations unit from the past.
I love bringing back the team.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes. A team that we have
and
loved for twos
have
of
very,
episodes.
Very memorable names.
Really distinct personalities. They all bring something different to the party.
One of them wears so much flair.
Well, this
filled
does
clothing.
Get into one of my ensemble criticisms of recent movies, which is everybody can't be so hot. Like, there needs to be, everybody can't just be a brooding hunk.
Yeah.
And they need, like, the team needs a me. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm too old, but you know what I mean? Like, the team needs, like, a weirdo.
But you could have, if we lived in a world where, like, Reacher was kind of like Commander Bond, and every few years someone else took over the Reacher mantle.
Love
you
it.
Could be old Reacher.
Oh. I'd love to be old
just
Reacher.
Just slightly shorter.
In defense of the show, what I like about the squad that Reacher reassembles is that you can really feel that they've gathered the best of the best from Vancouver to Toronto in terms of who was available during the 2 months they were filming this season. You know what I mean? Like, it's a real who's who of who was available in Canada.
Who's who, eh?
I love when you can watch all these shows and watch all of the proliferation of you get a sense of who all of the great Canadian actors of this time.
Yeah.
From The Expanse to Reacher to Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which, if you're not watching, is on my list and is fantastic.
Okay.
Fantastic. And I am, despite the fact that I'm on a Star Trek show, the kids show Prodigy, the animated kids show Prodigy, I'm not a lifelong Star Trek fan, have only recently been watching it. Star Trek Strange New Worlds, you don't need all of the information. It's just a delight.
Yeah.
I did like what I saw.
Yeah. But comedy and Reacher point, like in the most recent episode, I think, he goes to this guy O'Donnell's house and O'Donnell's like, I got to get my wife and my kids out of here because like, you know, the NA is after us or whoever. Mm-hmm. And Reacher's like, this is, you know, your wife's great. I really would have pegged you as a guy who would have had a slow death from gonorrhea. And you've really leveled out here. And I was like, it's pretty funny.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
like,
a good joke.
And he's drinking a Michelob Ultra while he says it.
And he's sitting in a seat that I feel like they walk around and are like, get this same chair smaller. Make this chair smaller. Yeah. Make him look like he's... Get him kid chairs.
I recently, during the break, watched the movie Elf with my children.
Terrific.
And they know the word CGI now. And they like, I don't think this is CGI. And I was like, no, this is movie magic. Movie magic.
They're like,
Bob Newhart is standing behind Will Ferrell.
This is forced perspective.
Yes. And I feel like there's still a little juice in that playbook.
Okay. Have you thought about lying to them about what is and isn't CGI?
I think about lying to them every day. What was the question?
I don't know. I just wanted to know if you would ever just be like, no, the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park.
That was real.
Those were the last 10 dinosaurs.
Well, we lived like that with the hoverboards in Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
we thought they were real.
I still know a guy who knew a guy who had one.
Yeah. Oh, there was always. And plus, because they would have those advertisements in the back of like Boys Life and other similar magazines where they were selling hoverboards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were the government wasn't allowing them to be released in time for the holiday season 88.
Do kids still do high tops with roller skating wheels in them? Like you know, like
wheelies?
Yeah, wheelies, like the ones where like all of a sudden like little wheels pop out of the back.
You talking to me, kid correspondent?
Well, yeah, I was just curious. Like, have you
is
ever,
that still a thing?
Is that something you've browsed?
Not recently.
Your kids are not interested in having shoes where skates pop out of them.
We didn't present them with that like as an option. You know, they're
because every in the 80s, every futuristic movie depicted a world in which everybody wore rollerblades to get everywhere.
Yes. Yeah, and sometimes those rollerblades allowed you to fly.
Well, yeah, but you didn't need to be that much of a hurry because you could always fax someone to tell them you were coming.
That's true.
And then you could strap on your...
We're living in that future.
Like, Reacher, to me, is perhaps this year... I think that there was like a purity of Reacher in the first season.
Yeah.
That was like, this guy, small town, corrupt, he's going to clean it up.
Small town, big guy.
Yeah. This
it's
is
right there.
This massive...
You're welcome.
Like,
yes.
Like
multi-state spanning
military
city.
Industrial complex conspiracy is a little challenging. I thought it was really noteworthy that this is so. The first season was based on the first Jack Reacher novel.
Cool.
This is based on the 11th one.
Oh wow!
So they've in terms of like how Slow Horses is doing it versus how Reacher is doing it. I thought that was fascinating, and I don't know why they necessarily chose.
This
to do
is
that.
My thing too. This show it's an Amazon Basics. This show could run forever. It will run for a long time.
It's a huge hit. To be clear, it's a huge hit.
Yeah.
And it should be. I genuinely enjoyed the first season. And I have to, sorry to be the, you know, sad-eyed samurai again, but like I have not loved this season because it seems to have just made a very strange choice. The developer, Nick Santora, like you have 20, 30 books that are all essentially, you know, more or less the same.
Definitely under the impression that all this dude does is go to towns and clean them up.
Yeah, and then walk to place to place.
Yeah.
As soon as you put him in New York, it is immediately less interesting because many shows are set in New York. Also, as alluded to previously, this is Toronto, York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which looks like it. And that takes you out even further. And then it's just, he's now surrounded by a bunch of people who know him.
Well, that's the thing is, it's undercutting exactly what they were setting up, which is this lone wolf drifter rolls into a town, stuff unfolds. It's a very, you know, Incredible Hulk. You know, Bixby, Incredible Hulk.
What do you think the remit is for the investigations group that he seemed defunct as they have all moved on with their lives?
The 1/10th?
But
you
they
mean?
Now operate with a license to kill and openly, like, just kind
Just talk about, like, oh, we're going to kill all those guys.
Yeah.
The casual level of murders.
Yes.
And the ability for them to murder people, have extended shootouts without there seemingly being anybody to come and stop them, intercede. There's
witness.
No police presence. Yeah. There's no witnesses. There's no people that are on the street. Nothing. It's so weird.
There's an amazing scene in the most recent episode where two of the women from the 110 get ambushed on a highway by three guys with machine guns.
And
They're driving like an Impala.
Yeah.
That gets sawed in half with machine gun fire. And they escape without it.
And not only that, they are just like having a calm, cool conversation right behind. Like, that's they don't do jokes. They do kind of almost light banter in the face of five dudes with submachine guns.
Yeah.
But you're right. I'm sorry. You're right, Andy, in the sense that this season, by introducing his past, by introducing the flashbacks, by having it be this larger ensemble, this might have been a welcome mix-em-up from three seasons of solo adventures. Yes. I'm enjoying it because I'm enjoying the team element, but I wouldn't have minded more Reacher-centric stories to then have this as a, oh, now it's an ensemble team.
Yeah, now
it's
we're
a
pulling
team.
Reacher back into the real world.
It's possible that the reason that they did it was because it does provide some backstory, and there's this canard that like, oh, we need backstory, we need origin stories, when I think kind of the beauty of this character is like, we get it. He's real big and he walks into places and pulls bad guys out of cars.
Yeah, and I think also that when this show came on, when we first started talking about it, was that 2020 or 2021?
21.
I think it was a little bit of a respite from some of the overly like mythological, like even cop shows or even, you know, other genre shows where it's like, we need to connect this back to this and this trauma goes
it
back to this.
It felt like pulp.
Yes.
It's got a great pulpy bruiser vibe to it that, you know, that feels to me like, at least especially in season one, and I'm having a blast in season two, in that same way that Slow Horses feels like an elevated pulpy type of story.
Yeah, but like there's like a degree to which Slow Horses, even though some characters pass away or whatever, or meet their untimely death, that you feel like you're playing in safe ground with Slow Horses.
I like the way you use the phrase sort of a respite, in the same way that the people creatively in charge of the show took a respite from good taste when they chose the font. You know, it's just like,
you don't like that Reacher font?
These things matter. It's just like,
I love it. I love that you're like, to look at a show like Reacher, you're like, the font is wrong.
Just make a strong font.
The Reacher, like the big Reacher
font? No, that's
fine.
No, when it's just like, Virginia.
Oh, and it looks like, I see what you're, I'm sorry. Not the title font.
No, the title card.
I get it.
I like that.
Oh, it looks like it's text from a classified file.
It looks like it's placeholder. Like someone used MS Paint to be like, it'll be Virginia later. We'll make
that's
it look
like,
more.
I mean, there is no more of a testament to how much stuff is getting made these days by the ways in which stock footage keeps slipping into this stuff. Like going back to Black Hat, when there was just straight up like stock footage of overhead of a nuclear reactor slipped into the movie, to now with like the fonts and stuff.
Can I ask you guys, again, particularly you, Jason, because you're a man of the world, accomplished in so many areas. How do you feel about, because, you know, maybe at UCB at different points in your life, you've been in charge of a team.
Sure.
What do you feel about Reacher's team building exercise? Because as revealed in the first two episodes of this season,
loved it.
He inherits the team.
Sure.
And they
recruits the team. He doesn't inherit.
But there's a bunch of sourpusses.
Yeah,
they're not
all
getting
fuck-ups.
Along.
They're a bunch of slow horses.
And his idea of how to make this work is he suggests they buzz off work, go to an officer's club.
Get some buds.
In the army and just have some very cleanly labeled, pointed, angled towards the camera Budweiser beers.
Yes. For sure.
And
well, there's actually like the entire Anheuser-Busch family is represented at that table.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then because he knows that there's a bunch of officers there who are assholes, they will take issue to Neely.
Yeah.
Drinking there. She is an enlisted.
Not an officer.
Woman.
Yeah.
And then he basically creates the elements for a giant fist fight.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
In order to then, which works because then within moments, they are boogieing on the beach.
Yep.
In a clip that I filmed and will share for the rest of my
life. But it is worth noting
seems
that,
like people having fun.
That Jack Reacher, or just Reacher, gives that guy long-term brain damage in the bar.
This
like
is
he
what
throws
I'm saying.
Him through
oh, yeah.
a window and then the last shot of it is just him repeatedly punching this man as hard as he can in the head.
Do you think this show is commenting on our divided country? Like, they're all in the same army.
Oh, yeah.
And they do not seem to be on the same page.
But he's gotta make his... to answer your question, that's exactly how I used to get my improv team to coalesce and
you
to
would
act
take, you
as
would
one.
You take him to bars full of dramatic
I'd
actors?
Take him to, I'd take him to bars full of dramatic actors, and I'd be like, see those guys over there? Yeah. They just said what we did is bullshit. What they're saying yes and is... For idiots.
That's the lady from Anatomy of a Fall. She thinks you're shit.
Jonathan Groff over there from Broadway just called us fools.
Takes drink of Budweiser.
Okay. What are you going to do about it? What would Del Close do?
Yeah. Daniel Day-Lewis is literally in character as Lincoln at this bar. And he is.
Mark Rylance thinks we're morons.
speed round here. Last couple things about Reacher I want to ask you guys.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know we were entering the speed round.
Robert Patrick, do you think, what was he told? Because so far, I mean, I haven't watched the whole season.
He was told this.
He's in a room.
He was told, walk around this hangar talking into this phone.
Yes.
That's it. And we'll ADR whatever we need
on
top of it.
That's what I figured, right? Yeah. They were like, we need you for one day, one long day.
Max.
Do you think he was there for the Sarah Connor joke? Like when they were like, oh, she checked in under the name Sarah Connor.
They were pretty pleased with that.
I was like, what? This is the joke.
That was the closest thing to a joke.
I do think he did like 3 days in a room somewhere.
Oh, for sure.
Ventura.
Do you think Reacher season two is lacking because of the lack of love interest thus far?
The opposite.
Well,
you haven't caught up.
I see what's coming. They've been laying.
It's got more of a love interest than the first season.
It's been pretty subtle.
The first season, I'm still putting myself back together after
the
first season sex scene.
Yeah. I don't need Reacher to have a love scene. Yeah. I'm not invested.
Top 100 things I need to see Reacher.
I'm not invested in Reacher's love story or a love story, I guess. And mostly because it doesn't seem like Reacher much is.
Yeah, he doesn't seem that open to it. He's not like on Raya. You know what I mean?
You think his heart is closed? What would his profile be? What song would he? Oh, he likes bluegrass, right? He likes
The blues. He loves like old time music.
He likes right.
Yeah, he's a big the blues.
I think his profile would be the same picture of him six times. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Because why would you have more than one picture?
And in his mind, he was like, I think I only did it once.
I nailed it.
Okay, should we talk about Percy Jackson?
I think we have to talk about Percy Jackson.
Sure.
You take the reins here because I feel like it's a huge hit in your house.
Yes. Well,
thank God
the books are a big deal. It's my older daughter. She read them all.
Cormac McCarthy's novels of Percy Jackson and Neil and Pete.
The Cormac McCarthy adaptations.
The last things he did before he left us.
Rick Riordan wrote these books about Percy Jackson, about a boy who discovers he is a half-blood. He's the son of Poseidon. All the Greek myths are real, et cetera, et cetera. Many book series and some film adaptations that were not well-received and not loved by the fandom, let's say.
Oh, as the fandom has made clear to me when I have met them, they hate the
movie. Yes, the movie. And I don't know of many other examples of like that where they are fully rejected.
Yes, en masse.
And so Disney Plus...
Kind of the first release, the Snyder Cut movement, was the rejection of the Percy Jackson movies.
I think you could trace it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys
I will say Snyder's cut of the Percy Jackson movies, very good.
Incredible. Incredible.
So many civilian deaths, though.
I thought Affleck was surprisingly nuanced, though. And so Disney Plus made a TV show with the involvement of Rick Riordan, I believe.
Very much. Very much involved.
And the first call they made after securing the bag was to our favorite Greek god, who's sitting here in the studio, who plays Mr. D. The show is really good. And this is the strict interview portion. I just want to know, how did you get involved in it? What was your connection
to
this?
Truly, not dissimilar to what you just described. I didn't know until I received an email from, my agent saying, hey, they're doing this.
You're Greek, right?
And, one of the things is, I think I'm the only, I might be wrong. I don't know everybody in the cast, but I think I'm the only Greek. I think I'm the only actual Greek.
You didn't 23andMe them?
I didn't 23andMe.
Yeah. Swab everyone delicately.
Yeah, I'm going to need to get inside them cheeks. Let's do it.
It's not for COVID. It's for heritage.
I need them to own your information. And I got an email that was like, hey, are you interested? Do you know these books? Because I was obviously aware of these stories. Mm-hmm. I hadn't read these books, but I had read the Harry Potter books and a lot of those other like long running fantasy, big epic stories. And so I was like, oh, let me check it out. And so I read the first book and was really into it. And so took the meeting, talked to the people who were making it, and then just was like, this was when other people were starting to live their lives again, but I was still hiding in my house from COVID-19.
Yep.
But so I was like, okay, I'll do it. And part of it was I had such a great time on because it's like a big commitment to a thing that I'm like, oh, let's see what this is. And I'm excited by it, but I'm also like, well, I don't know.
But it could be years of your life.
It could be years of my life in service of I'm not sure what.
Right.
Exactly. But I loved the book and I loved the story. And then I'd had such a positive experience working on one season of that show, Paper Girls, for Amazon.
Yeah, which I really liked. Yeah.
And specifically working with all those young actors who I thought were so incredible. And I thought the show was so exciting and that I got to play a villain in that show. I really enjoyed. And that show ultimately didn't get picked up again and went away. And so when the Percy Jackson thing came up, and it was similarly getting to work with like a group of incredibly talented young kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, the core trio they've got, you know, Arian and Leah, who are incredible actors, and this kid they've got playing Percy Jackson, Walter Scribble, I think is his name. The kid is dynamite, you know, and it's so fun to be in a show where I'm getting to be like a fucking asshole to kids and have them be like incredible back.
Because you're Dionysus.
I'm Dionysus.
But you're also Bill Murray in Meatballs.
Yeah, and that's kind of, that's it. It's like Mr. D, Dionysus, is being punished by the Greek gods and forced to be in charge of this camp where all the kids are, all the demigod kids
And the
live.
God of wine can't drink.
And the God of wine has had his booze taken away from him, and he's being forced into a position that he does not want, which is to be in charge of these kids. So when they were like, yeah, come up here to Vancouver and just scream at these kids for a couple of weeks, I was like, absolutely.
For 7 years.
And I get to do scenes with all these kids and everybody in it. James Bobin, the director, is fantastic. Glenn Turman, who is Chiron and who I do a lot of my scenes with, is just, do yourself a favor and read his Wikipedia. He is easily the most interesting person I've ever talked to. And when you're doing a show with kids, there is a tremendous amount of downtime.
Because they're all at school and
stuff. All at school. They can only work certain hours. There's just a lot of downtime. So to be in a little tent with him out in the woods or off to the side if we were shooting on the stage, and to just hear his stories were like the best. It was like the best days of work. Because, you know, we're doing fun job or doing fun scenes. But then him just talking about being a cowboy or him talking about being in like the first Broadway production of A Raisin in the Sun.
Jesus.
I was just like, when he's like 13 years old or something, I was like, this is fascinating. So it was really cool.
And now he's being a half horse in front of a green screen.
Oh, here's the thing that I feel like I think I can say this because I don't think this is that crazy, but it's not talked about. But in scenes where he is a centaur outdoors, not when we're shooting on the volume, but out when we're outdoors in the woods, because he is such an adept horse rider, he is on horseback. So I'm doing scenes.
Was that like his request?
I don't know.
Or were they like,
I'm
this
not
would
sure.
Be really
did he bring his
easy.
Own
I think
horse?
It helped. I don't know if they, I don't think it
it's
was
a Canadian
his
horse.
They, it's a Canadian horse.
His horse has to be in the union.
Yeah, and they, yeah, it's a Canadian
very
horse.
Very strict about that.
Canadian actor horses are fiercely protective.
Of course.
They don't
they
want American horses coming up there and taking
after
their
what
jobs.
Happened with SCTV for horses when it sort of got
those
after
guys happened, are also ever since Luck. They
I was
like,
just
really
gonna say, they lost six of the seven Luck horses were Canadian, I think.
Did we talk about in one of like the interviews that he's done for Ferrari Man was like someone just kind of idly mentioned Luck and he went on like a three paragraph answer about how it was very honestly Trumpy where he was like, the SPCA said that nobody had ever treated horses better and that we had just had like the worst day ever and that was the problem. Like,
yeah. I remember on the
horses
press,
die sometimes.
Oh, yeah. On the press junket for True Grit, the Coen brothers talking in an interview about how they were surprised to learn that there were more protections in place for the horse that she rode than for Hayley
Steinfeld. Yeah.
That they could put her in freezing cold water for X number of minutes, but the horse couldn't at all be submerged in the
Matt Damon, you could just toss
him. Matt Damon, as long as you've got a defibrillator around, you can put him into, you can code him.
So, Jason, comedian, actor, philanthropist.
Greek god now. Yes.
God. But also someone who is a fan and a member of various fandoms.
Yeah.
And, What has this been like for you to be
so cool
in something that is beloved, that was expected, that was anticipated?
And you're exactly right, because it is so cool as a fan, as a rabid fan, to be in a property and to have now had the experience where I get to talk to young people for whom these books and stories are to them what I felt growing up was Star Wars for me, or maybe Indiana Jones. Those were the things that to me I was like, I live inside of this. Or Marvel.
I thought it was Jackie Chan movies.
Yep. But, you know, so to be like a thing, to be part of a thing that people are so, like, Andy, I heard from you, I heard from so many people when I got cast that were saying, my kid is flipping out.
Oh, yeah.
My kid is flipping out because I know you. My kid is flipping out because they know you. They can't believe that this is happening. And then subsequently, I've heard that they love it. They're obsessed. You know, all I'm getting is positive feedback from all of the young people in my life, which is incredible.
It's been interesting watching a young person's interact. So basically, the first pass of the first episode, my older daughter was just like, that's not what happens.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Sure.
Percy doesn't have blonde hair. Like, sort of asserting specific confidence.
Sure.
But then interested, because then you sort of have to define that. You have to keep the guard up.
Totally.
But then it sort of softens. And it's well made. And so do you have any sense of, you know, no future is promised in this industry, but was this greenlit for more than one season at the start?
It was not. And I wonder if that's just because it's an expensive show.
Yeah.
You know?
Your quote alone.
My quote alone. Oh my God. Yeah. And I think the horse gets more than me.
Definitely better protected. Yeah.
I don't know, but it's doing well. I'm assuming there'll be a season two, and it's meant to follow the books, you know, each similar to the Harry Potters or Slow Horses, I guess, each season, the next book and so on. I'm curious. I think, you know, we're in that situation, like a lot of things like this, in that these kids are at that age where not just years, but months, they look different. Like seeing them from the last day I shot to seeing them at the premiere on the red carpet. I mean, night and day, they are different looking kids. They are taller. They are, you know, it's interesting. So that'll be an interesting thing to play out, because it's a lot of story to come. And can we compact it?
That's because they got an Irishman, the kids in Stranger Things, pretty soon. Like, they're going to de-age those dudes.
It's all AI.
Was this your first time working on The Volume?
Yeah.
How was it?
Nuts.
Yeah?
Nuts. It was cool. I liked it. You know, it was interesting because our days on The Volume were just, what was being projected was just the same as the set up in the woods.
Okay.
So we were just, it just allowed us to be a little bit more not dependent on weather.
Oh, so you did some location shooting and then you did pickups or additional shooting
in the volume.
Scenes, in The Volume.
Yes.
It wasn't this is only Volume.
No.
This is,
no. So sometimes in some of those scenes, it's a little of both.
Oh, okay.
Did you, when it was on The Volume, turn to the camera and wink so that the audiences would know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I thought that was...
Oh, I'm sending a lot of signals. Yeah.
Did they ever accidentally load the Mando Volume screens?
No.
No.
No, but I'll say this as, you know, like, I have the same criticisms when I'm watching some of, whether it's Mando or some other things, where I'm like, this isn't textured enough.
Yeah, it's not the Tunisia New Hope feel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but from an actor's perspective, being on a set that is active and alive, everywhere I look is a facsimile of what I'm supposed to be looking at versus just green.
Yeah.
Like a green screen room or something like that. It is incredible to have that technology.
But when you were in the movie Eternals, didn't you appreciate that Chloe Zhao was not using The Volume, that you were actually in the places?
When I filmed my helicopter battle scene from the movie Infinite, it was just a big giant green screen room. And they were like, look to the left, fire, 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 bank right, fire, fire, fire. And I'm like, what? I don't know what. But when you're in a thing and it looks like what it's meant to look like, it was, and it, just on an experiential level, I was just like, tell me exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Because there's like a mission control style group of, like, I don't know, 70 people at desks that are just calibrating the volume.
They're just calibrating
constantly.
Baby Yoda's ear hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was super interesting.
Just picturing a room full of 15 Canadian horses at desks. Because it's like a union. They can't get fired.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Production.
Oh, no.
Like,
once you're
lunch,
in.
I get an hour.
Once you're in, you're clomping around.
I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't get a couple more Mantzoukas recommendations out of you before we let you go.
Let's throw some more in. Like you guys. Oh, you know what, though? Because I want to also thank you. Because as we're talking about stuff to find and stuff to watch, again, it comes up against, like, how do you find stuff anymore? Where are the places that you get recommendations and whatnot? I turn on my boys and boom, you're talking about the gold. Pushed pause.
Yeah.
Fired up the gold. Loved it.
Yeah.
Good show.
Loved it.
That's a good show.
And that's the kind of show that, to me, I've recommended it to so many of my friends and peers who are all super savvy, super have great taste, have never heard of it.
Yeah.
Have never heard of it.
Totally.
Like, it's a zero on
people's
radar. That
was a big thing this weekend I saw going around of people being like, I think that they had just, the Monsieur Spade stuff just hit, where people are like, wait, there's a Dashiell Hammett adaptation from Scott Frank starring Clive Owen, and it's on Sunday.
On AMC Plus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm in. Kai, so I'm excited for that show. I can't wait for that show.
Kai, the part where Jason said we were good, could you put that at the top?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to throw out some other... I mentioned Unicorn Warriors Eternal, which is Genndy Tartakovsky's incredible animated show. Like, truly one of the great animation geniuses of our time.
And he was involved in the Clone Wars stuff?
He did the very first, the micro episode Clone Wars stuff.
Oh, okay.
But he did Samurai Jack, and did you guys ever watch Primal? The story of a Neanderthal man who befriends a T-Rex.
I didn't.
And they have wordless adventures that are incredible.
For a second there, I thought you were going to be like, and they have
no,
beautiful, very beautiful sex.
No, but it is just, he is easily one of the, Miyazaki accepted, one of the true masters of animation story, visual storytelling. So much so that this show, Primal, has two seasons. There's no dialogue in it. It is just beautifully told visual stories. Absolutely fantastic. But he put out a new show this year called Unicorn Warriors Eternal that I won't even try and explain, but is just bananas.
And where's that at?
Adult Swim somehow?
Maybe it's Adult Swim.
Okay.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the mix. One of my favorite shows coming to an end is Luke Pearson's Hilda.
Do you know Hilda? Yes.
Incredible show.
They didn't watch it regularly. The books, yes.
Yeah, love the books. Sometimes. I gave the books to, like, my nieces and all the kids in my life. And now they've done multiple series of adaptations and new stories that take place in an incredible kind of folktale world.
It's very good.
Hilda goes on adventures. They did a movie. Anyway,
that's this Netflix also.
Final season is up and it's fantastic.
Chris, you got a lot to catch up on.
Yeah.
Starstruck, I loved. Shorzy, I think you guys would love Shorzy. Are you watching Shorzy?
I've tried Letterkenny a couple of times with my wife, who I often watch sitcoms with, and we just have not gotten into it. So do I need to watch 13 seasons of Letterkenny to watch Shorzy?
Okay. You can watch Shorzy straight away. Now, the character of Shorzy is established in Letterkenny, but never on camera.
And a lot
because
of his crime fighting is explained in Letterkenny.
Shorzy is, I think you guys will like it because it's also a sports story.
Okay.
It's an underdog sports. It's a story about an adult hockey team trying to win the championship, or they get folded.
Okay.
A lot of Canada on this podcast.
You know what?
Yeah.
What the fuck? You're right.
We used to make things in this
Hold
country.
On. I got
to
look for some fucking good old American-made
entertainment. Yeah.
What else? Oh, I wanted to talk about, and I sent it to you guys, but I'm certain you didn't watch it. I don't necessarily think it's TV, but it qualified to me because it was multiple episodes. The Making of RoboCop documentary called RoboDoc.
Oh, yeah, I just haven't seen it, but yes, Sean was talking about this the other day and was like...
Oh, Fantasy's into it? I'll see you guys later.
Isn't it like 4 hours long?
Sean?
It's probably out there.
I wish the door made a better sound.
Yeah,
I did a whole bit.
Kaya can put in like old school.
Thank Kaya.
Like, yeah.
I should have just pointed at you, Kaya,
sounds.
And said, "Can you put a creaky old door sound?"
I was impressed by the commitment. You used both arms from
it
jump.
Was so
it's a heavy door.
The door was so heavy. Yeah.
That's what the Swedes seal us in.
Until the content emerges.
There is nothing. I haven't laughed maybe one of the funniest shows of the year is the documentary about the making of RoboCop.
I don't know about
including that. What is now, I guess, a viral piece that has gone around where Peter Weller becomes only refers to, will only be called Robo.
Yeah.
Everybody calls him Robo. He only calls him Robo. He's in the suit. He's trapped in the suit. It's been going on for months. And the only way he'll go to set is if, in his words, Robo wants an Oreo.
Stop.
Robo wants an Oreo.
This is real?
Oh, this is real. Everybody tells stories that are so wild and so inappropriate that you would think the movie was made in the 90s. The documentary was made, yes. And it was made last year.
Right.
It's fucking nuts. It's 6 hours of every...
Can you imagine what they left out?
Everyone is in there. Everyone's talking about it. It's absolute
Where
mania.
Can we watch this?
Who knows?
It's I think it's on YouTube.
It's on, I think, Amazon. I think I rented it on Amazon.
Okay.
But it may be on YouTube. RoboDoc, incredible. What else?
The Amazon. Gold.
Hilda. I think this is 2023. Why didn't they ask Evans? The Hugh Laurie Agatha Christie adaptation.
You're going so deep on us.
Will
I love
Poulter.
It.
You guys love Will Poulter.
When do they have time to do this?
I know, right?
Well, the Brits, they're just like, I'm going to sneak a 4-episode show.
Yeah.
Stephen Graham will be in like 8 movies and then he'll do like 3 BAFTA winning series in a year.
It's a nice life.
McFadden has done like 2 seasons of that.
Scandal something. Yeah, right.
Something.
Do you think it's because everything's closer there? Like,
I mean, it definitely helps.
Because if you get in the van, you don't have to drive to, like, if it's relatively convenient.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably
very little
you
on
can
location.
Traverse
that's
the country well, in the time it takes to get from New York to Boston.
I think it also helps that, like, yeah, you're right. We're only doing 3 episodes of this. When you're like, how did Helen Mirren do 22 seasons of Prime Suspect? And you're like, oh, every season's 2 episodes. Yeah. Like, what are we talking about?
Some of the seasons were no episodes. Yeah. They just talked about
half of it
them.
Is her making tea. And half the other half is her being horrified. Yeah.
Anyway, that Agatha Christie adaptation I thought was fantastic.
Wow.
And I went down a whole rabbit hole of
Agatha
Christie.
Are you an Agatha Christie guy? I never hear you bring it up.
Well, first of all, I do keep some things to myself.
Yeah, right. Well, I was just wondering.
Not everything is content. I did read a lot of Agatha Christie when I was a kid. Like, not a small kid, but like 12, 13, I would pour through some mom and dad's paperbacks.
Yeah.
Just to get the whodunit.
But you never had like a renaissance.
No.
It. Okay.
No. You?
I like watching the movies, the Poirot stuff with my mom. She enjoys them a lot. But I do not, Christie is not my jam.
Watching the PBS mystery adaptations of those shows, that was a family thing.
Yeah.
We watch those shows.
Yeah. And like the Sidney Lumet, you know.
Death on the Nile.
No.
Orient Express
is the one I was going to say. Yeah. Those are, they're great. I watched a bunch of them, I think, you know, last year. For some reason, I got on a real jag.
Who's caking off those? Who owns the estate?
The estate?
Great question.
Are they PD?
I think Bill Ackman owns that.
They public domain? Yeah. He wrote a whole series.
They're trying to cancel Poirot.
I just wonder, like, because you notice, like, there's a lot of, you know, we were talking about this a bunch, like, Le Carre's sons are like, we're going into the dad business, so we're going to. Yeah. And then now
one
when
of
you see...
One of the homies is like, I'm just going to start writing my dad books again.
Yes. Yeah. And then if you see, which I don't recommend that you do, but if you do see the movie Wonka, there's a whole thing in the beginning where it's like Roald Dahl Story Enterprises and they have a deal with Netflix. So like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is the thing.
Oh, well, I mean, like, did you guys talk about the Wes Anderson Roald Dahl?
We didn't talk about them.
I only watched one of those. Yeah.
They're great. I watched a bunch of them. I really enjoyed them.
They were really
You just watched Asteroid City.
I did.
Yeah, same. Loved
I had
it.
Not seen it.
What'd you think?
So, thanks for asking.
Yeah.
How much time do we have left in this podcast?
Great.
I was really, really confounded and kind of moved by it.
Yeah.
Because at first I was like, this guy, all the critics are right. This guy's up his own ass. It's so busy. It's there's so many layers of remove.
Oh, yeah.
And every actor ever is in it. It's too much.
Only is trying to make it difficult for you to get inside the movie. It is consistently keeping you at arm's length. But, in a great way.
But then I was like, but it's very weird.
Yeah.
It's risky.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising and like discomforting. And I was like, this felt like, you know what it felt like? I said this to Chris back when I was texting him last week. It feels like someone's last movie. Now I'm not.
Oh, interesting.
I am not. I don't have any
insider
knowledge. But
we've gone through a bunch of like Grace Note films this past year or films from like people sort of in like Scorsese and Michael Mann. Where
yes.
It feels like we're kind of like.
Or your guy Miyazaki where it's just like, this feels like. A summing up and a resetting.
Yeah.
And I found it really compelling. And this is a thing as I'm going through a lot of the movies like you are, where I'm, you know, there are some movies that you watch it and you have your opinion. There are movies that as you get further removed from them, you like them less and less, whether that's fair or not. Maestro. And then there's movies that you like more and more as you think about it. And Asteroid City kind of messed me up.
Yeah. No, I just am in the bag for Wes Anderson movies.
Historically, I am.
In a way that I have really enjoyed ones that almost everybody else I know
I
has
the same way.
Disliked
I think even,
or...
Like,
really? I didn't know this about you, Chris.
Jeerling, like, I'm like, that's still like...
Jeerling, yeah.
Yeah, it's still...
Life Aquatic?
Life Aquatic, I love.
Oh, I feel like people love Life
I think
Aquatic.
Steve Zissou, I love that movie.
Wow.
But that is
Moonlight
a movie
King,
that...
Moonrise yeah. Kingdom?
Oh, I'm in on Moonrise. Yeah. Moonrise Kingdom was coming back. I was back onto that.
Budapest?
Oh, yeah. Budapest is great.
Budapest is incredible.
But the role doll, Henry Sugar is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
fantastic.
And he's having fun.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing is, like, those Asteroid City and the those shorts, those Roald Dahl shorts, seem like mischievous fun in a way that I really enjoyed.
Who were your low-key Asteroid City all-stars? Like, because I thought Tom Hanks was amazing in it, because he used Tom Hanks
I mean,
in a way that
only
good directors
use. I mean, is it stupid to say Margot
Robbie? No, that thing that's interesting. I'm
trying to
Rupert
think.
Rupert Friend.
Yeah.
He's great in it.
What?
It was great.
He's great.
The three little girls I thought were terrific.
Yeah.
When we get them, like, I thought they were great.
That was
the kid playing the son, I thought was fantastic.
Jeffrey Wright's good.
Oh, yeah. Always good.
Adrian Brody.
Yeah.
Brody
oh,
son.
Yeah.
It's time.
I've been down with the Brody son since he was in the Predator movie a while back.
Oh, my God.
He's
incredible.
Awesome
where now. Lawrence Fishburne, where they find Lawrence Fishburne on that planet.
He's
been
there for a bit.
And he whispers all of his lines. It's an incredible scene.
That cast is incredible.
Yeah, that movie's nuts.
Yeah. We just ended the pod right there.
And then, just theme song. I was just looking at my, because I also keep a list. I do a, like Soderbergh
style.
A full list
how
of
do
everything
you,
I'm wanted.
How do you determine when you add a book to it? Is it based on when you finish the book?
Yeah.
Because I can't
I
tell
only
with him.
Put things when I finish.
Okay.
I only put a thing on when I've finished.
I was doing that last year for the first few months of the year. And then as every single day ended with a Law & Order SVU, I started to feel really vulnerable. And I didn't want everybody to know that. So I just constantly admit it. But I don't want to put up a list that's like, you know, here's what I watched that night.
I don't want to see. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
My own truth.
Oh, I love it. I find that I feel... such a sense of it both provides me with a to-do list and also like the satisfaction of completion.
Yeah, it's also like a kind of a journal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it is the only journal I keep.
Yeah.
You know, I don't keep a journal, but I keep this detailed list of what
I wonder if Soderbergh keeps a journal because like that would be a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
He'd spend most of his time watching stuff, writing stuff down that he watched, and then journaling.
I think he seems wired that way.
But then he also makes three movies a year, so I don't know how he would do that.
But he's a dink.
No,
right?
He's got a I don't know.
Yeah.
What's a dink?
This is a term Chris introduced me to.
Well, it's a dual income,
no
kids. No kids.
Got it.
He's a dink.
Yep.
Yeah. He's got time.
Got it. Okay.
He's fine.
You guys watched because we brought up Le Carré Pigeon Tunnel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't love it. Did not love it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Tom Wolfe documentary?
Didn't see it.
Okay.
Didn't see it.
Tom
Radical
Wolf.
Wolf?
Back in the news because of Lenny. You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta share this doc with us. We gotta
oh, it's
prep
a lot.
More.
It's a lot. I'm trying to because I feel like hold on. I do feel like there's something that I want to talk about from. I know for you guys.
Yeah,
the Elephant Six Collective.
Oh my God,
documentary.
Yeah.
I did not watch this yet. Did you?
I did not watch this yet,
as,
but I know
how. That,
as someone,
how have you not watched?
As someone who attended the Kindercore Records
oh,
Expo in Athens, Georgia, in 2000, I feel like you know it's a little too fresh for me still.
It is, I can't tell you how strange it is to now be watching documentaries
yes.
or reading books. That are about a period of time that is my life.
That's how I felt watching Saltburn.
Oh.
He's still the best. This is why you get the big bucks after the horses.
Once Murder on the Dance Floor came up, you were like, this is my jam.
This is my life.
I remember where I was.
Sophie Ellis Bextor, baby. Yeah.
But to watch the Elephant Six documentary or the documentary I watched about one of my favorite now defunct record stores, Aquarius Records in San Francisco,
yeah.
to watch documentaries that are about...
There's a Kim's documentary.
Yeah. I'm sure. The period of time in my life or Meet Me in the Bathroom. That's a book the entirety of which takes place concurrent to me being part of a comedy scene that is adjacent to this music
scene.
Being
in the bathroom next door.
Literally being like, I was at that show. Yeah. I'm 90% sure I was at that Oneida show, you know?
I was in a Barnes & Noble in Philly waiting for my rental car to be ready. Mm-hmm. Cool personal anecdote.
So cool.
This is fun.
And
what are you driving? What are you renting?
Well, I got a RAV4.
Fuck yeah.
But also, this is Chris's way of bragging that he's over 25. We get it.
Babyface Chris Ryan.
A Hold Steady book. Mm-hmm. There's a book about the Hold Steady at a Barnes & Noble in Philadelphia. And they had like all the, like the early shows. And I was like, Did it, that one. There were so many of them that I was just like, that was at Mercury Lounge. I remember that night.
Oh, yeah. Did you mark up the book? Did you check marks next to everything?
I signed every page.
CR. Yeah. Maxwell's CR.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, you know, there are some other things that I'd love to shout out. Hold on. What's one of them, though?
We should make it clear to the listeners that you have a sheaf of papers.
I have so much. Here's a kind of...
It is so, so many pages.
Have you ever had to deal with that sound effect in particular in your producing career? I didn't think so.
I do want to shout out a couple of old things.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like I mentioned The Grifters earlier, an incredible Stephen Frears movie.
That's on Criterion, I think, right?
It's fantastic. I think it might be. Yeah, I think that's maybe where I saw it. The movie that is like, I feel like I watched it a couple of years ago during the pandemic and loved it, just rewatched it again. And it's utterly fantastic in a way that I don't know why everybody isn't being like, hey, what a fucking gem is The Fabulous Baker Boys.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen this. This is The Bridges Boys. Yeah. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Get in
never
the business.
Never have seen it.
Get it. Get out of here. Wow. You and me, we're doing fantasy now.
we're doing a Fabulous Baker Boys rewatch.
Yeah.
Live.
I'm not strong enough to open the door as fast as you did.
And
I'm
it's
not
the
doing
kind
the
of movie that I want to highlight because it's exactly the kind of movie that you guys talk about, that we talk about all the time, that simply is not
that
made.
That one is definitely
it
not.
It is not being made even remotely. Nobody's interested in... you know, argumentative brothers who are, you know, lounge piano duos about whether they should bring a singer on or not.
Yeah,
Steve Kloves. Steve Kloves, 29-year-old wonderkin, like, Steve, we love you.
Go
what
for
do you
it.
Got?
And he also like that, he was like
piano playing brothers,
and then he did Flesh and Bone.
Yeah,
and then I don't know,
and like almost nothing else. A couple of other writing credits.
Yeah,
but I don't think he's
a lot of writing. He wrote all the Harry Potter.
Oh yeah. Oh no. So big time writer, but has not directed
a great house probably.
Oh my God.
He's making it never got made. Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Oh, interesting.
Didn't make it.
I think that movie is just absolutely fantastic and so refreshing and so exciting to watch.
I love this for us.
I love this.
Fired up.
Let's get on text when you have watched it. And then those two movies and then a TV show that, boy, did I think that once it was on streaming, people would go apeshit for it, and they have proceeded not to. Hmm. I would say maybe my number one show of the year, were it to be able to include old shows.
Can I guess Moonlighting?
Absolutely, it's Moonlighting.
I forgot it started streaming.
But this is one of the weirdest things in the world where it was like, be like as if the Snyder Cut came out and no one watched it.
It is.
I forgot.
People were so like, when will fucking Moonlighting?
It's like those few shows that have never been streaming. Moonlighting, 30-something.
Homicide Life on the Street.
Oh my God. Incredible show. Devastating loss. Andre Brower. Devastating loss, but incredible performance, incredible show, Homicide Life on the Streets. But Moonlighting is a show that, like, we are spending so much time talking about how much we want to be back to TV and how much Poker Face or some of these shows, Reacher, Bosch, are in many ways, you know, throwback style shows to the era of network television, blah, blah, blah. You watch Moonlighting and you're like, this show is absolutely fascinating with what they're doing and how they're doing it in a way that you're like, I can't even believe they're making these jokes. They're doing this stuff at this time to such an incredibly high standard.
I thought when that was kind of coming back on streaming, I was curious as to whether it would still play now because so much of what was happening with Moonlighting when it was on was the metatextual, the celebrity stuff going on around
them
Bruce Willis
actively
and Civil Shepherd.
Inside of the show commenting about the show's public narrative, right, that it was fraught, that it was delayed, that they were blah, blah, blah.
If I remember correctly, it begins with a meta commentary because when they move in, they start their detective agency and Heart to Heart is moving out.
Oh, is that, are you being serious?
Is that, I remember this. Maybe this is wrong, but my memory.
I don't think that's, maybe there is a season where that does happen, but the beginning of this Blue Moon, maybe you're right though. And
it's just a flashback or something.
Maybe it's a visual joke.
Because Heart to Heart ended, guys. Yes. As we all know, Heart to Heart ended in 1984.
Of course.
And Moonlighting began in 1985.
Robert Wagner and Stephanie Zimbalist?
See, you know. We
is
know.
Is that right?
Two-thirds of this podcast knows. I am so excited to see if I still love the show.
Boy, give it a chance because there are episodes that are such a fucking blast. And it's the kind of show that I'm like, make this.
Yeah.
Make a screwball comedy TV show. Why aren't we doing this?
It was a dream sequence episode.
Great.
In season two.
Okay. Got it.
It didn't start.
Got
by
it. Oh, okay. It, but it, I must have seen it then.
You are like Bill, as Bill is to the Boston Celtics, yes. You are to your memories of 80s primetime television shows.
Being like, canonical?
Yeah, right.
Well, that era too, those, there were certain shows that were so impactful because, I don't know for you, but for me, I wasn't necessarily allowed to see Moonlighting unless I was like, good, unless I had not gotten in trouble.
This is why it was like, was from Miami Vice for me.
But this is why you be careful what you wish for, because I do remember being invited to watch Moonlighting with my parents. We only had like one TV, you know? And it was the episode where, and spoiler alert, people were watching it on Hulu, where David and Maddie. Sealed the deal.
Consummate
their relationship. Oh, wow. And I don't know if you remember,
what a great,
I'll never forget.
What a wild intro to that
their coitus, their coupling is very violent. Like a lot, they break a lot of furniture.
Oh yeah,
I don't like that you said coitus. And then
I want
coupling.
Everyone to feel as uncomfortable as
their
I felt.
Coitus or their coupling
because I'm watching this with my parents.
Yeah, happened with me with Dennis Franz's naked ass and NYPD Blue with my parents.
But that defined your sexuality for years, and you should embrace it.
How many people had a sexual awakening with Sipowicz's ass?
Yes, true.
It's, to think that that's what
we—that's
what was like. We're gonna allow nudity in prime time on network television.
But Dennis Franz.
Get me Franz.
It's Sipowicz, baby.
We can wrap it up there because I
where
feel
else
like
is there to go?
I feel like after we get to the bottom of the Dennis Franz is behind, where else can we go?
I mean, we did a great job. I think,
dude,
I threw out a bunch of stuff,
and you fake left. You joined the big picture.
I did. Yeah. I'm here to say I will never leave the Y.
This is my guy.
Jason, thanks so much for coming by.
Gentlemen, this remains one of my absolute favorite listens. I can't thank you enough for your service in this industry.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you're watching cartoons now, Chris. Delighted.
I'm watching cartoons. Greenwald's watching Moonstruck. Moonlighting.
Moonlighting. I love it. Let's get into it.
I'm just watching Moonlight over and over. It's not as I remember it. And Jason, you can be seen on Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
I can.
How Does This Get Made podcast.
Absolutely. Invincible.
I'm going to plug stuff. Plug stuff.
I'll plug Invincible as well. And, you know what I actually will plug? Because, boy, would I love for people to go and find it and check it out because I think it's fantastic. John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum. is Star Trek Prodigy, which is a fantastic animated Star Trek show. It's on Netflix now. So please find it. It is great. Coming-of-age, young people adventure show. Like, what if a group of, like, ragtag kids stole a Star Trek ship and started roaming around the universe.
I just Googled, he is in the show.
Yeah.
He's not lying.
I'm in that show.
We'll try to put together a list of all the stuff that Jason recommended and put it up with the episode. Dude, thank you so much for coming by.
Great to see you.
Thanks
what
to
a
Kaya
delight.
For producing.
Thank you, Kaya.
We'll be back on Thursday.
And let me know what you think of Calling from Accounts, Kaya.
I think you're talking to your audience.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, File a claim right on the State Farm mobile app and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.